Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today, Seth chats with Aziz Ansari, star of Master of None. Then you'll hear a brand new Late Night Chats with staffers Wally Ferriston and Lloyd Bishop. But first, a closer look.
The Trump administration has been in chaos after the president's shocking decision to fire FBI Director James Comey. And today, Trump spoke publicly for the first time about that decision, contradicting everything his White House has said since Tuesday. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Even putting aside the substance and the suspicious timing of the Comey firing for a second, the optics of the last 48 hours have been a disaster for the White House. For one thing, there's the fact that Russian officials are publicly defending Trump, as Vladimir Putin did yesterday when a CBS reporter was able to catch him before a hockey game in full gear.
How will the firing of James Comey affect U.S.-Russia relations?
There will be no effect. We have nothing to do with that.
President Trump
is acting in accordance with his competence.
In accordance with his competence? Is it me? Or was Vladimir Putin just a little sassy? The weirdest part of that interview, though, was when Putin seemed to suggest that the reporter should come play hockey with him.
So what about us? Why we? You see, I'm going to play hockey with the hockey fans. And I invite you to do the same.
I'll be here and I'll be watching. Thank you very much.
Never has an invitation to play hockey sounded so ominous. Although anything would sound ominous coming through that grinning translator. Please, join me for an afternoon of macrame. We will make each other friendship bracelets. Now, if it seems like Putin's enjoying himself, it's because he has a lot to be happy about. On Wednesday, the day after Trump fired the man investigating him over his ties to Russia, Trump met with two top Russian officials in the Oval Office, including one who's been at the center of several damaging Trump-Russia stories. Look how chummy this meeting was. For the very first time since the election, Trump seemed so very happy.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name.
I think at this point, Trump is Russia's Norm. Now, if this meeting seems brazen, there are also the details of who specifically Trump was meeting with.
Today, the White House hosted Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, and more notably, its ambassador to the United States, Sergei Kislyak. The same Sergei Kislyak, ambassador and Russian spy, with whom General Michael Flynn had discussions and then lied about it.
In fact, that guy, Sergei Kislyak, is the same guy Attorney General Jeff Sessions had a meeting with during the campaign that he failed to disclose during his confirmation hearing. How could you forget meeting this man? He looks like they fished the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man out of the East River. So the White House The White House has been engulfed in chaos. In fact, just to give you an idea of how crazy things have been, when this news first broke on Tuesday night, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer was outside the White House near the TV sets where the correspondents do their on-camera reports. But Spicer did not want to be on camera himself, which led to this bizarre anecdote in the Washington Post. And this is really what they wrote. Spicer disappeared into the shadows, huddling with his staff near a clump of bushes and then behind a tall hedge. He spent several minutes hidden in the bushes. I'm gonna go hide in the bushes so the reporters can't find me. Wait, what's that rustling sound? Oh, God! Apparently, Sean Spicer forgot the immortal words of the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Isn't it fun? With no context to try to remember what that could have been about. But apparently, someone in the White House complained to the Washington Post about how they described that episode, because this truly amazing correction was attached to the article yesterday. This story has been updated to more precisely describe White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer's location late Tuesday night. Spicer huddled with his staff among bushes near television sets on the White House ground, not in the bushes. I wasn't in the bushes, I was merely among the bushes. You know, like they accepted me as one of their own. And when the White House is clarifying the press secretary's position in relation to bushes, it's important to remember America is both among and in deep. And then there's the president himself. When a president makes a decision as momentous and controversial as this one, you'd expect him to explain his thinking publicly to the American people. But Trump only spoke out publicly for the first time today, 2 days after the news came down. Before that, all we had were his early morning tweets attacking Democrats. In fact, this is how Fox and Friends, his favorite TV show, reported on those early morning tweets yesterday.
President Trump is awake.
They report on the president the same way the Japanese press reports on Godzilla. He is awakened. We must flee. Now, since the news broke on Tuesday, the White House has argued that Comey's firing had nothing to do with the Russia investigation and that it wasn't even Trump's idea. They argue Trump made the decisions on the recommendation of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who wrote a memo criticizing Comey's handling of the Hillary Clinton email investigation. White House counselor Kellyanne Conway tried to make that argument on CNN, but I'm not sure it was all that convincing, given that she didn't actually seem to know how to pronounce his name.
Now you're criticizing Rod all Rosenstein. Right. Could it be that the reason that Rod Rosenstein wrote the report had nothing to do with that? It has to do with, quote, I cannot defend the director's handling of the conclusion of the investigation.
That is his conclusion. People
Secretary
can read it for himself,
emails?
And his name is Rosenstein,
well,
by the way.
Well, that's great.
I'm sorry I got it wrong, but I was out late last night because I wanted to see Bruce Springsteen. Can't blame Kellyanne. She's never been a Einstein. So, that was the White House's story. It was the Deputy Attorney General's recommendation, not Trump's idea. At least, it was their story until today when Trump gave an interview to explain his decision to fire Comey by contradicting every argument his team had made on his behalf, saying the whole thing was his idea.
What I did is I was going to fire Comey. My decision. It was not...
You had made the decision before they came in the room.
I was going to fire Comey.
In your letter, you said I accepted their recommendation.
Yeah, well,
so
also,
you had already made the decision.
I was going to fire regardless of recommendation.
So there was really...
He made a recommendation, but regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey.
So he just admitted everything the White House has been saying since Tuesday is a lie. Trump's ego is so huge, he can't even let somebody else have the spotlight in his alibi. He's like a Scooby-Doo villain. That's right, it was me. I was the ghost in the amusement park. Now, as you may recall, Trump also included this very bizarre paragraph in his termination letter to Comey. I greatly appreciate you informing me on 3 separate occasions that I am not under investigation. Trump said in the interview he had specifically asked Comey if he was under investigation, but then added that actually he didn't need to ask anyway because he already knew he wasn't being investigated.
Did you call him?
In one case, I called him. In one case, he called me.
And did you ask, am I under investigation?
I actually asked him, yes. I said, if it's possible, would you let me know, am I under investigation? He said, you are not under investigation. And at that time, he told me, you are not under investigation, which I knew anyway.
That was one meeting. What was the other
two? First of all, when you're under investigation, you're giving all sorts of documents and everything. I knew I wasn't under.
I guess there's one upside to being sued as much as Trump has. He's an expert on being investigated. Believe me, I know when I'm being investigated. In fact, how to know you're under investigation was one of the most popular classes at Trump University. Also, can we go back for a second to Trump's description of what he said on the phone to Comey?
I said, if it's possible, would you let me know, am I under investigation? He said, you are not under investigation.
He sounds like he's afraid to ask a girl out on a date. Would you ever consider going out with a guy, tiny hands, maybe wealthy, maybe not, huge liar? Write yes or no on this piece of paper. So, the White House story on why and how Comey was fired has now completely fallen apart, because while Trump contradicts his own White House, we're also getting more reporting on what was really going on behind the scenes. For example, the New York Times reports that there was a growing divide between Trump and Comey over Trump's false claim that Obama had him wiretapped, a claim Comey has publicly debunked. According to the Times, Trump fumed when Comey publicly dismissed the sensational wiretapping claim. Comey, meanwhile, was flabbergasted. The president, Comey told Associates, was outside the realm of normal, even crazy. I like how Comey started with a more flowery term of art and then just settled on crazy. You see, the president doesn't exactly have all his wits about him. He's not exactly playing with a full deck. He's one banana short of a smoothie. I guess what I'm saying is, my dude is cray. So the White House story on Comey has fallen apart, and the FBI director thinks the president is crazy, but at least there's one good piece of news coming from the White House.
President Trump is awake.
Oh. Maybe that's bad news. This has been a closer look.
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our guest tonight is an Emmy Award-winning comedian, actor, and New York Times bestselling author who you know from his work on Parks and Recreation. The second season of his critically acclaimed series, Master of None, begins streaming tomorrow on Netflix. Please welcome to the show, Aziz Ansari, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
You well? Everything good?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited the show is back.
Yeah.
The first season was fantastic.
Thank
there were
you.
Many things I loved about it.
Thank you.
But I think the thing I love the most is that your actual parents played your parents on the show.
That's what everyone loves.
Yeah.
No they one cares about me.
That. And that probably gets back to them, right? They must be very proud.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my dad is always asking for a higher pay or something.
You brought them to the Emmys last year, and you won an Emmy. Congratulations
yeah,
for writing. And did they enjoy themselves? Did they have fun at the Emmys?
They did. They had a good time. Yeah, it was really fun. It was fun to see them dressed up around all those crazy people.
Did they go to the after party? Did they go out with you afterwards?
No, they went home.
Okay.
Yeah, they didn't go hard.
Yeah.
They had some other non-Emmy parties that they went to.
Oh, I see. Yeah. My parents, when I hosted, my parents came to the after party, and my mom went hard.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was problematic. I feel like there are still, like, 6 or 7 hunky actors in L.A. who remember my mom as as the lady without boundaries. one of the things about this, so this season you go to Italy.
Yes.
And you actually learn some Italian
mm-hmm.
for it.
Yeah.
And how long did you have to study it to pick it up?
So I studied for about 3 weeks, and then I lived there for 2 months. And in the time I lived there, I picked up a lot. And now I'm not fluent, but I'm really good for an Indian guy.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
You're top 10 Indian guys
yeah,
who speak
yeah.
Italian?
I think so.
And... But then you also, not for the show, Japan. For how long were you in Japan?
Yeah, we finished this season, and I just kind of wanted to get away and clear my head and do some writing, so I just wanted to leave, and I went and lived in Japan for a couple months.
Wow.
And, yeah, I tried to learn Japanese.
How long did you give yourself before you went?
Japanese, I didn't have time because we were editing the series, so I only had 1 week, and Japanese is really hard.
Yeah.
So I just sat with my teacher my sensei, Kobayashi-san. And I would just give him very specific scenarios. Like, I knew I was mainly just going to be writing and eating food. So I said, okay, let's say I'm sitting at a restaurant and someone's eating something that looks good. How do I ask about that? So now I know I just have to go, Soreo nan desu ka? Oishii. Sumimasen, mo hutatsu kudasai. Which all of that just means like, what is that? Is it delicious? Excuse me, can I have one?
Fantastic. Well, because, I mean, again, I'm no expert, but that I feel like that sounds really good. It's the pronunciation's really good.
I am so good at such a little amount.
But you then, is there that thing where people hear how good you are at that they assume you know more?
Absolutely. They, yeah. If the guy said anything else, I'm just like, ah, so desu ne. Which just means like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Have you brought it back to you to the States? Have you tried to use Japanese here?
Oh, yeah. So I was in L.A. a couple of weeks ago, and I went to a sushi restaurant that I go to there, and I was all excited because I now speak a little Japanese. So the guy sees me. He's like, where have you been? We haven't seen you in so long. I said, oh, I'm mainly in New York now. And Tokyo ni 2 kagetsu imashita. Skoshi nihongo wa wakarimasu. And then he said, I'm Korean.
I don't know. It's weird because you feel like you've made an error, but I've got to be honest, I'm on your side there.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, who's the racist guy at the restaurant that hired him is my question.
Yeah. Your brother writes on the show.
Yes, my brother Anis. He's a fantastic comedy writer, and he wrote on the first season and also on the second season.
That's so fantastic. First, that you guys get to work together, but also you have this shared experience, obviously, of your upbringing, and you guys use real-life stories in the show.
Yeah, we did this whole episode about religion, and, you know, my family is from a Muslim background, and so we were trying to do this montage of just kind of Islamophobic kind of racist things that have happened to my character. And I have been, you know, recognized a lot for the last few years. So I've got less of that. But my brother is not recognized. And so he had some hilarious instances of racist Islamophobic stuff happen that we didn't get to put in the episode, but I thought I would tell you guys them. Because they just make me laugh so hard, even though they're very mean things, but it's very funny to me. And this is weird. You're like, this is going to be funny? It sounds like it's very mean. So there is one thing he told me where he said that he was at a Dick's Sporting Goods in Charlotte, and he was walking around, and some guy goes, hey, tourist, get out of here! And he looked around, and, like, he didn't see anybody. And he's like, where is this coming from? And the guy goes, hey, tourist, get out of here. And he looked up, and there's a guy on a rock climbing wall who yelled it down. Like, he was climbing the indoor rock climbing wall, and he sees a brown guy. He's like, let me handle this real quick.
You have to be so racist to take time out of rock climbing.
Yeah. He's like, all right, I'll handle that rock in a second. And then my favorite one was, and this is so crazy this happened, but he claims this is true. He said he was walking down the street in New York once, and some guy across the street goes, hey, why don't you go back to Pakistan? And he just, like, stopped his tracks. And then the guy goes, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I'm talking to my friend behind you. And there was a guy behind him sitting in a taxi cab, and apparently they're friends, and the guy really is going back to Pakistan. And that was an inside joke they had.
So that's a nice one. Because then those, unlike the rock climbers, those are not racist.
Yeah, those guys were just had some inside giggles.
They weren't particularly smart with their inside jokes. Their out loud inside jokes.
Yeah.
You had a Thanksgiving episode where you had kids who played younger versions of you. Was it fun to work with a young fictional Aziz?
Yes. There's so many young Azizes we have in the show. So we do this one Thanksgiving episode. It's about me and Lena Waithe's character, Denise, and it kind of covers our whole friendship since we're little kids, and we had little kids. And so the little kids were all really great. This one kid I remember, it was so funny to me. This kid had to do a scene where he just comes downstairs and he asks Denise's mom, hey, can I have this bite of macaroni? And he already has it in his spoon, and the mom's like, well, go ahead and eat it. You already have it in your spoon. So the kid would just take a bite. But the kid was taking these little tiny nibbles, And so I kind of pulled him aside, like, hey, man, we need you to take a little bigger bite because my character really likes food, and part of this is that he really likes macaroni. So can you just take a bigger bite? And he's like, oh, okay, sure, sure, sure. I mean, he's a little kid. He's like 5, 6 years old. So we do it a couple more times, and he starts taking bigger bites. And then, you know, when you're filming something, you spit it out. So it's not like he's filling up or anything. Right. So it's not a big deal to keep doing more takes. But at a certain point, he just disappears. I can't find this kid. And everyone's looking for him, and I'm like, I don't know where the kid went. And then I go outside, and he's standing outside with his mom. I'm like, is everything okay? He's like, I don't want to eat any more macaroni. The bites are too big, and the cheese is crispy on top and scraping the roof of my mouth. And I was like, all right, man, sorry. It sounded like a dream gig to me. Just come and eat some macaroni, and they yell cut. But all right, if you don't like it, we'll change it. But he did a great job. He was a really great kid.
All right, good. So it worked out.
Yeah, he's great.
Congrats again. I'm so glad it's coming back. I'm so glad it's available for all of us to watch. Thanks for being here, Aziz.
Of course.
Aziz Ansari about his second season of Master of None. Begin streaming tomorrow on Netflix.
Hey, I'm Wally Ferriston, and I am the head cue card guy here on Late Night with Seth Meyers. I am also owner-operator of New York City Cue Cards, which is my own company, so that means I'm an important person.
Hi, I'm Lloyd Bishop. I am the photographer for Late Night with Seth Meyers, and I don't have a company or anything else, so I'm not as important as Wally.
And this is Late Night Chats with Wally and Lloyd. Late Night Chats. So welcome. Welcome.
Hi.
Lloyd.
Hi, Wally.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Listen, I noticed from your accent you're not from this country. Would you tell the people listening what country you're from?
You're right, Wally. I'm not from this country.
That's right. And I haven't been able to pin it down yet.
It's okay. I'm actually going to just let people guess. I'm not going to tell you.
Well, we don't have a phone for them
there's no phone.
In,
so. So I am from Scotland, the west of Scotland, a place called Glasgow.
Glasgow. Yeah. I've heard of that.
I would say sunny Glasgow is not sunny.
Now, one thing a lot of people don't know about me was that I was Donald Trump's personal cue card guy. And I may not believe in all the politics of his now, but I am required to ask you this. Are you here legally, Lloyd?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a tricky situation.
Okay.
I'm just going to say yes and let people's minds run wild with maybe I'm lying.
Okay, and this is even trickier. Wife and kids, they're here legal too.
So next question. Yes, my wife, you know what? I come all the way to America and I end up marrying an English woman. Smart thinking, right?
That's smart.
That's not how you get a green card. Marry an English woman. Yes, my wife is English. My kids are American, but I often try.
Did you meet your wife here?
I did meet my wife here, yes. Who also works in the photo industry, randomly enough. And yeah.
That's awesome.
It's how about you? Where did it all start for you, Wally?
I married a nice Jewish girl.
That's the best way. As a Scottish Jew, it's the best way.
I have not an interest in, you know, business and things like that. I'm just not good at it. Was not interested in it at all.
Well, why do you think I'm a photographer? I take pictures. I press a button for a living, Wally.
Yeah, so I'm so proud that I'm a small business owner. I wouldn't have been able to do anything without my Jewish wife guiding me down the path of saving money. And
isn't that what all wives are for?
Yeah.
Because let's be honest.
Yeah, you're right.
We'd kind of be screwed without them.
You're absolutely right.
We don't like to tell ourselves that very often.
No, they like to hear it.
I probably would be out of this job already if my wife hadn't talked me off a ledge or something. So, you know, thanks, wives.
Let me ask you this question, Lloyd. I've actually really thought, when did you start having an interest in photography?
Oh, it started a long time ago. I think it started with an excuse to get out of some kind of like maths or English class at school. I think it must be when I was like 13 or 14. There was a TV program in the UK called Blue Peter, and they had a photography competition, and one of the categories was sports, and I'm an avid soccer fan.
Thank you for the game with the foot
and the ball.
I gotcha.
And so I basically blagged myself into a soccer match onto the sideline with my really small, shitty camera that I knew no idea how to use. You know when they say as a photographer, oh, you should never shoot an automatic? That's exactly what I did because I didn't know what I was doing. And this was in the days of film, so I think in the first 45 minutes of the game, I went through about 12 rolls of film, and yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. And that kind of leaded on to the passion that I now have, and I'm very lucky I get to take photos for a living.
Were you good at it right away?
No. I mean, some may say I'm still figuring it out, but hey.
No, they whisper that behind your back.
As long as it's behind my back.
Yes, you'll never hear that in this. You'll never hear
this. How about you and your cue cards? I'm sure you didn't go, you know what I want to do?
I went to Syracuse University, and I majored in, funny enough, cue card writing for TV, live TV performances.
Shut up.
No, I didn't.
See, I could easily believe that. And you're like, you could have just gone with that when I believed
it. No, I wanted to be a writer really badly. I went to Syracuse and I majored in writing for TV, radio, and film. Actually, the same major as our host, Seth Meyers.
Oh.
He was at Northwestern. I was at Syracuse. But it was
where's
the same,
Syracuse? Excuse my
the same major. Upstate New York.
Oh, it's New York. Okay.
Yeah. And right. It was one of the top communication schools. So I was lucky enough to get in. And I really wanted to be a writer. I was really passion to do it, and I took this cue card job when I moved to New York after college just to get my foot in the door, and I made some connections, and I did some writing, but I got really good at it really fast.
What, the writing or the cue cards?
No, the cue cards. And within 3 years, I was running SNL,
and that was
and then
sick.
Within like 5 or 6 years, I was running SNL and Carson Daly and other shows, and then I owned my open company, and I've had this company now for 13 years.
How many different shows was it now?
It's too many. The four main shows I've got now are Late Night with Seth Meyers, Saturday Night Live, Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, and Conan. Those are my four main shows that I do.
And anyone else in New York? Or is,
I am the only guy in town that does cue cards in New York.
Now, I guess it must be just you've built that relationship that people don't need to start testing or searching for other people. You know what you're doing. Your company's got it down, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. We're pretty good at it. And I'm good at what I do, but also the guys that work for me are fantastic when I do.
I mean,
and I can
you've
trust
trained
them.
Them. Yeah, that's the thing. Yes. You need to be able to let them go and do their show yes. that you're not at and know that you don't have to worry.
Exactly.
When you start with like a new guy, do you ever get notes from like other shows saying, oh, this guy really messed this up or this?
Well, here's the thing with a new guy. New guys come in and they come in a probationary measure and they print cards for like a couple days.
Oh, yeah,
and if they can't print cards, if I see there's no improvement in 2 days, then they're done.
You've done it long enough that you know what
yeah.
to look for.
So if their printing is good, that gets them in the door. And then right. if they're available to work different shows and stuff like that, then I'll start slowly giving them more responsibility and I'll build them up and train them that way. But I don't just throw somebody in the mix until I feel comfortable.
And do you find it's people just coming to you saying, oh, I really love to work in cue cards? Or is it just, oh, my son's just out of college.
Some people do come to me, but it has to be timing. You know what I mean? Most of the people that work for me now and that have worked for me in the past are friends of mine or friends of people that already work for me, because you're bringing somebody into a group that sometimes you're, you know, sitting in the same area for 14 hours a day.
Straight.
And if you don't get along with everybody, it's not a fun place.
It's not going to end well for anybody.
No. So they will bring people in and say, oh, you know, I think they'll get along well. And that's another thing we look for, too, is someone that's got a good sense of humor.
Yeah, that's it. You need banter and easygoing.
Without
it. I've seen your cue card area. I mean, maybe we should we should post some pictures online
yeah.
for the people that haven't seen the... How should I say? The romance of it all.
Yeah, it's not...
very romantic. I mean, it's kind of cool. Look. As a foreigner, as we've talked about, coming to America and coming to work in late night, you know, I used to work for Jimmy Fallon at Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. And I remember, you know, coming in and coming to America, I didn't really know about late night TV. You know, I knew of David Letterman.
Mm-hmm.
I knew of Saturday Night Live. And you obviously, you know of all the world famous comedians that have come out of there.
Sure.
But, you know, as someone not coming from America, it's not like... And not in my blood is the wrong word, but it's not something I've grown up with.
Sure.
Like, we had a few TV shows in the UK, like chat shows, but nothing like the stability of it here. Like,
right.
We had a few, like, Terry Wogan and Michael Parkinson.
Oh, I was huge fans of those guys.
Who are great, but it's a very different... Like, you've got your format in America. And so, for me, coming into that, it was like, wow, this is... It's really something... It's history that I'm getting to be part of. And I felt that's how I approached the job at Jimmy, and the same thing here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to shoot behind the scenes at SNL 40. And it's the same approach I take, is I'm kind of creating a historical document. And it's the same when I come back to see you in cue cards. You're, for people that don't know, Wally's cue cards area. Area?
Yeah.
Area.
That's what we call it.
It's not quite an office. It's an area.
No.
It's under the bleachers at SNL. And you can look straight onto the floor, which I guess is really useful for during the show.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're in there and you're seeing rehearsal, or you're seeing, like, the guest, the host that week have their photo shoot done by Mary Ellen, and you're in the cue card area just watching it, there's that. Oh, God, it sounds so cheesy. But it's like that magic of the TV and the history. And the
yeah.
And again, I walk into that. And I remember the first time walking into cue cards. It was before I ever met you. It was when I was at Jimmy. And I think I was looking for Brianna,
right.
who is a girl I used to work with at Fallon. And I came in. I'm like, this is so cool. Like, your desks are just like wooden desks that have got ink marks and pen marks. And there's just piles of cue cards. And it's not fancy or like... luxurious, but it's really fucking cool. Sorry. It's really cool to see it. And it's like, this is how it's been for however many years.
Yeah. I lose sight of that a lot working, having been there 27 years. I kind of lose sight of that fact, how cool it is.
I mean, I think we all do. You know, we all have very cool jobs working at late night, whether it's, you know, at this show or any other show. We're so lucky we get to do this every day.
I know, it's pretty amazing.
But, you know, you come to work some days and it's like another day. And then the other days you kind of go home, you're like, well, I got just to do that
today.
No,
you can appreciate it.
It was really cool. And so I think, you know, especially when, you know, you got families and life's exhausting sometimes, it's nice to step away and appreciate what we get to do every day.
Yeah, no, there was an SNL pop-up museum exhibit two years ago.
For the 40th, right?
For the 40th, and that made me appreciate our area a little bit, because I came into work one day and our desk was gone, and I was like, where's my desk? And it's like, oh yeah, they took it last night to put in the museum exhibit. I was like,
wow,
really?
That's really cool.
Well, that's cool, but what am I going to write on? I need a new desk. And they brought in a makeshift desk. Then they built me a new one, and that's the one that's there. But they took it. I never got it back.
You never got your original one back.
I don't know where
it is. It's in some kind of museum.
It's in Iowa. So it's in someone's garage in Iowa. They bought it for $20 or something, and they're trying to decipher stuff on there.
It's another funny thing with the cue cards. It's, you know, during the show with Seth, usually either before our last talk guest or before our musical guests, Seth goes into the audience and does a Q&A. And I love one. Oh, there's always a question, at least once a week, of, why do you use cue cards? Like, why don't you use a teleprompter? And look, for people that I used to think the same thing. I remember starting at Jimmy, I'm like, what is going on with these cards?
Yeah.
And you learn very quickly how great it is compared to, you know, a prompter. I guess you can take this when it's what Seth always says, I guess.
Yeah, Seth has only been reading cue cards from me since he started on Saturday Night Live. 13 years, he did 13 years of SNL, so he came in, and that's the cool thing about working at SNL for so long. I mean, I was there when Will Ferrell came in, you know, as a rookie, and I was there when Jimmy Fallon came in as a rookie, and I was there when Seth Meyers came in as a rookie.
Wait, what year did you start?
1990.
Wow.
Actually, so I was a rookie with, if you want to go really back, Chris Farley and Adam Sandler.
Jeez.
We started the same year. I was 25. Those guys were probably a little younger than me, a couple years younger.
Wow.
And we kind of bonded because I was just learning cue cards, and they were learning, you know,
how to read the cue cards.
Seeing these guys start from nothing really, and
that's
then
awesome.
See where they are, and you know, see where they are, and see where Seth has gone from, you know, starting and going to update and being Seth. By my money, he's probably one of the best writers that I've seen come across. And I've seen a lot of good writers, just solid, solid writing background. And that's really what I think gave him that
edge.
Rise up. Yeah, it really did.
And it's funny, like with the cue cards, he's kind of scared of teleprompters.
He's so good at reading cue cards.
Well, he's just done it for so long.
Oh, my God. He reads so
like,
fast.
He says,
sometimes.
You know his rhythm.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like,
yeah.
If he pauses for a laugh, cue card, a teleprompter guy in the other room is not going to go, oh, should I stop?
He'll ad lib lines sometimes or mix the words around.
But you know.
And I know when he's doing it, I know where he's going to pick up again or if he's done with that part.
And that's,
so that's just, you know, knowing him. So, yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. And then, seeing your last minute changes with your tape and your pens hunched over under the bleachers trying to get all the last minute changes done before show.
Yeah.
It's really cool to watch.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun, and I explain to people too. Like Seth Meyers, we tape it. We're supposed to tape it at 6:30 or different times every time. But if we're running late, if they make late minute changes, they want to do something else. You know, they'll delay it 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Saturday Night Live, you don't have that luxury.
No.
They're going at 11:30 whether you're ready or not.
Yeah, that's it.
So there's a little bit more pressure. So that's why Seth is more fun for me to do because. Yes, you get last minute changes, but you know they'll hold the show for
pressure.
The
pressure's not as great.
Pressure,
and it's not live as well.
No,
which is nice. Wait, did we do live shows? When did we do live shows?
We did live shows.
Oh yeah, it was
during the debates.
The
right?
debates. That was it. Yeah, that was kind of exciting.
Yeah,
it's something we don't get to do. It's like old hat for you.
Yeah, it was.
Well, you know, I've done live before.
I do it every Saturday.
You know,
21 weeks out of the year.
You've only got what, 3 left of the year?
Two left. Yeah,
wow.
2 left. But we're not supposed to talk about Saturday.
Oh yeah,
I don't think.
Yeah, let's not.
Let's talk more about Seth Meyers. Let's talk more about you, Lloyd.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to ask. This is a bad. I don't know why I wrote this. Do you have a favorite picture you ever took? But.
I take lots of, you know,
of
it's
pictures,
funny.
Right?
I take a lot of pictures. I take up to like 1,500, 2,000 pictures a day sometimes.
So that's hard. That was another question. How many pictures do you take a day?
A lot of pictures. I mean, it depends on the day. Some days I go to rehearsal if there's like.
That's a lot of pictures.
A
do
lot
you look
of
at every one
and
of those?
I edit down every one. I go through around 5,000 to 6,000 images a week.
How many of me?
Most of you. There's at least one naked or semi-naked picture
close.
Of Wally.
We don't need to talk
but
about
we can
that.
Get onto maybe the naked Wally stories after.
Yeah, that's later.
There's a lot of pictures. What I kind of do, again, going back to the point what I was saying before about the history and being part of that.
Yeah.
I started this at Jimmy was, and I brought it when I came to late night, is I shoot all these behind-the-scenes pictures of not just Seth and the guests. I mean, I'll give you a rundown of what I do my day-to-day. So come in, we go to our morning meeting, and then I usually sit down at my desk after the morning meeting, go through pictures from the day before, seeing anything that stands out, send them off to guests or whoever. I try to make prints for guests.
That's cool.
Because, you know, in today's digital age, so many people have got pictures on their phone, but there's no a print on a nice, like, archival sleeve paper to hand someone. And, you know, they can throw it in the garbage if you want, but it's nice for them to take something home.
I can speak to that because you drop off photos of me all the time, and it's very, very nice.
It's a nice memento.
Yes, I love it.
Because people don't get to print their photos very often.
No.
And also the pictures I'm handing out of Wally was, and it's going back to the point that Wally has known so many people, is when we get ex-SNL people or people that have hosted SNL, everyone remembers Wally because they're so petrified usually of doing the show live, as I think any of us would be. And then Wally's there to make them feel better and be with the cue card. So their eye line is with Wally the whole time. So it's like, I feel Wally's like the calming savior for this stressful hour of these people's lives. And being a celebrity at this, it must be just, I can't even begin to imagine.
And then when they see me a year or so later, it's...
And Seth, they're like, oh my God, Wally! And they always give you a hug or shake your hand.
Paying respect. I call it paying respect, Lloyd.
Paying respect to the Godfather. Paying respect to
me. And then you take a picture of me with them, and I get to show it to my kids who don't believe that I really do anything cool. And then they look, oh, that's you with John Goodman, or that's you with Will Ferrell.
Yeah, there's all... And you're always like, did you get it? I'm like, of course I got it, Wally.
I got several pictures with De Niro, which... I'm sorry, Bobby.
Bob.
Yeah, Bob. I know him as Bob. But yeah, it's very nice that you do that. So
nice. I look at the photos, whatever, and then, you know, rehearsal comes round and I go to the studio maybe just to find out camera blocking, what's going on. And I also like take pictures of the staff doing their thing, whether it's in the studio or in the office or backstage, just because it's all these people that make this show happen. And in 20, 30, 40 years' time, all these people want a document of they were part of this too.
And, no, it's really cool.
You know, people are like, oh, can you print me this? It's like Mother's Day coming up, so I've had a lot of people already this week going, can you just print me this picture of me for my mom? I'm like, sure. Because, you know, we want to give nice pictures to her mother.
That's very nice.
And going back to the thousands of images is...
Those,
I started... Oh, God, I'm not very good at putting... I get things going through my mind and putting into words. So... I saw all these behind-the-scenes images I was doing, and I'm like, this is part of this historical document, blah, blah. So I started doing something called, like, the weekly selects, where I went through all those images, and I made, like, a selects folder for the staff, for the photo department, just to see and, like, make an archive, and it became, like, an archive for Jimmy, and then I started doing one for Seth. So, you know, when Jimmy did 5 years of Late Night, he looked back, and he had hundreds upon hundreds of images of moments that weren't your press images of him interviewing a guest, but it was those moments when he talks to the guest backstage, just as I do with Seth.
Yeah.
And like today, we had a great one. We were talking to Cecile Richards from Planned Parenthood. Seth was in there before the show. And all of a sudden, Danny DeVito literally runs in and he goes, I want in this picture. And so he jumps in with Cecile and Seth. And it was a nice wee moment.
Awesome.
And so I get to take those pictures, and, you know, for me as a photographer in 40, 50 years' time, I'll look back at this. I'm like, I got to do that. And so, you know, yes, there's a lot of pictures. There's a lot of stuff that never sees the light of day. But
with digital, it's so
much
easier.
With the joy of digital and Instagram and social media, everyone gets to put out my pictures and be proud of what they get to do every day. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I cannot complain, that's for sure.
You should not. You shouldn't complain about that.
I do not.
Okay, I have a question that I think listeners want to know. How much money do you make a week, per year, after taxes?
Oh, after tax or before tax?
Well, if you get all these down, you want to...
I mean, if we say one photo is like one shiny coin from the leprechauns.
I was just joking about that. Oh, no one wants to know how much. Because then I would have to...
Admit what I mean. And then we don't hate you.
Yeah, and you guys don't want
to know. You've got that gold-plated car you drive to work in, right?
That's right. How about this? What's your favorite cocktail after a hard day at work?
Anything with vodka in it.
Okay.
Well, actually, you know what? I'm not a huge drinker, but there's a drink, and people think I'm just a bit stuck up. But it's just a drink in Scotland. It's called a long vodka.
What's that?
What is that? If I said to a barman here, long vodka, I think they'd just give me straight vodka in a tall glass.
Yeah, right.
It's... It's just vodka, Sprite, or 7-Up with some fresh lime and a few dashes of Angostura bitters. You know that bottle that everyone sees in the bar?
Yeah, I know what bitters
is. So a lot of people go into bar and goes, what is that? It's like a dirty yellow bottle, like brown bottle with a paper. It's
for, we use it here for like people that are hungover or something. You put little bitters in that. So does that.
So the bitter, I don't know. It just gives it a wee taste and it's very nice. And it goes down a lot easier because I'm not a big drinker.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But sometimes you have the hard day and you're like, I need something
heavy to get me through. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a vodka guy too. Yeah? I'm a vodka guy too. I started drinking vodka and soda with a splash of cranberry.
Right.
Yeah, it's a little dainty.
But you know, I used to get made fun of a lot for my vodka cranberry orange.
Yeah.
Because it was my pink drink. You know what? Whatever makes it go down easy.
Yes.
So I never really drank beer or lager and not my cup of tea.
No. You don't like beer?
I am not. My dad used to work in the booze trade for many years. And so when I finished school,
what do you mean by that?
He used to wholesale alcohol.
Oh, okay.
So he used to import alcohol from like America and wherever.
Oh, interesting.
And he's, you know, in Scotland, no one drinks, of course.
Yeah,
so,
no,
we don't like alcohol.
No, not at all.
So he used to sell it to like bars and clubs and restaurants. And I used to have to work in his warehouse every summer. And after school, like putting together orders.
Yeah.
And this place is a warehouse full of booze, and there's a lot of like spilt booze or open canisters, and the smell used to.
Oh.
I still could smell, like talking about it now. So,
the
smell of like stale booze and beer put me off alcohol.
Yeah, so, I used to bartend. I bartended.
That's the thing
before.
As well. Like,
yeah, so.
No.
So, I don't drink. I drink, but I don't, you know, go crazy. Like, I should have learned how to drink scotch when I was bartending because there were so many great scotches.
I do wish I drank whiskey more
because, me
too. You know, I was like, oh, do you like whiskey? I'm Scotch. I'm like, I'm a Jew. I don't really drink. Not to sound bad, but I feel, I used to work at a bar and we did an event. It was a Jewish function. And I said to my boss, it was like a 700 person capacity venue. This is completely off topic, but whatever. And I said to him, mate, this is going to be your lowest takings you've ever had. And he refused to believe me. And at the end of the night, he goes, how did you know? He goes, because it was a Jewish event. Everyone's drinking orange juice and Coca-Cola.
That's right.
I'm not going to generalize, but that happened then. And,
no,
you
that's
know.
Okay.
I'm trying to think what else I want to know about SNL. Oh, yeah, like, you know what? About your, not about SNL, about your, we often get the pleasure of seeing Wally either naked with some blurs or some compromising position, shall we say.
Yeah.
How do you manage to get yourself roped into this? You just don't mind, do you?
I don't care. I mean, I was, like I said, you know, I wanted to be a writer, but in high school, I was the star of all the class plays and stuff. I didn't have aspirations to be an actor, but I really liked,
you didn't mind
I didn't mind doing it. And most writers will admit, as you can see on this show, they want to be performers.
Of course.
You know, so that was kind of in my blood. And anytime they ask me to do something, I'm honored to do it. And I'm very honored that Seth trusts me to be in sketches and trusts, you know, my timing and stuff, which is, you know, very cool. So when he asked me to do something with no clothes on, you know, how can I say no when they ask me to do things with clothes on?
Yeah.
So I kind of channel, like
it's not
I said
you can
before,
start being a diva and saying, no, I only do things dressed, darling.
I watched Chris Farley just go naked all the time. Like even when he wasn't on camera, he would come up naked in rehearsal to make people laugh. And I saw that and I was like, wow, that guy, he's fearless. So anytime I'm asked to do something like that I should scare the crap out of me, I think, okay, Chris Farley can do it. I can do it.
It's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we're all, it's like a kind of big family here.
Right.
Everyone just wants a laugh.
Yeah, no. And they pay me for it.
Wait, hold on. What?
I get
you
extra
get paid
money
for this?
I get extra money for that.
Wait, extra money?
Oh, I'm getting a big
deal. You get paid to work
the
here?
Podcast is paid. I'm getting a lot of money.
Wait, hold on. Can we just cut right?
I'm
sorry. I just did this for the goodness of... They said because I get my green card, I get to work. Wait,
never mind that.
Next. Sorry, what?
Yeah, I had a question for the podcast guys listening. They don't have to answer, but...
Do you think
they asked us to do this podcast together because we both have double L's in our names?
Yes. Lloyd? Actually, Lloyd should... It's a Welsh name, Lloyd, meaning grey-haired. It should pronounce Lloyd. It's really pleasant
on
the back of your
throat. But two L's, though, right?
Double L's, yeah.
And I got two L's in Wally, even though that's not my real
name.
Wait,
what's your real name? I'll tell
people. Us. So Wally is a stage name, and this is, people are very confused. A lot of people
don't
know this.
But you're not an actor.
No, my real name is Christopher Donovan Ferriston.
Oh, so Ferriston is your...
Ferriston's my real last
Donovan,
name.
Wait, Donovan, we got to utilize this, guys.
Yeah, Donovan's my middle name. It was my dad's middle name and my brother's middle name as well, because I have Irish background.
Okay.
But yeah, Wally, my brother nicknamed me Wally when I was a kid. And then I lost it when I went to college, and I moved to L.A. right after college, and I lost it. And then my brother got me the job at Saturday Night Live, and he introduced me the first day.
Because your brother used to work here.
As Wally, my brother used to work here.
Right.
Spike Ferriston. And he introduced me as Wally my first day at work, and Wally was back. But you know what? The name Wally has done very well for me since I've been here. Because Chris, the cue card guy, Does that really
doesn't
have,
sound, it doesn't got that ring.
It doesn't have a thing to it. So Wally the Cuckoo Guy? Pretty good, right?
It's pretty good. That you did well with that one.
Yeah, I mean, I should thank my brother, but you know what? He never given me anything besides that. I never even trouble.
Brothers, they never do, right?
What else do I got for you, Lloyd? I think we're starting to run out of time.
I was like thinking about this before. Like, I'm going to ask Wally this, and now I've completely...
Okay, I'm running out of questions. Let's end on F, Marry, Kill. No, that's the bad idea.
Oh, wait, no, don't do that.
Oh, I had one here about... besides Seth Meyers, is there anyone in the office who you really don't like? I'm just kidding.
Okay, I nearly answered that. Oh, that's lucky.
You can't. Who's the messiest in your office? How about that? You share an office.
That's probably me. Let's be honest.
You share an office with people?
I share an office with our great director, assistant director, Alex and Amy, and our floor managers, Tom and Steve.
Right.
Steve and Tom.
Who's the messiest?
I just don't know who I'm going to get in trouble for putting which one first. And obviously, our great field producer, Dan McElroy. Who's the messiest? Oh, for sure me. Like, no, that office was serene and quiet and peaceful. Then I got moved in there and all hell broke loose. Like, I get, you know, photographers take up room with all their rubbish.
Yes, you're allowed to be
and,
that way.
You know, they don't like, well, you know, they don't like, they put up with it. But I'm very messy, but I also try and clean up after myself. You know, that's what happens when you have kids. You've got to learn to clean up after yourself. I'm trying to teach my children this.
Oh, they'll never learn.
4-year-olds don't pick this up that easily, surprisingly enough.
Listen, my two boys are 17 and 14, and I just had a big, not I want to say argument, but a conversation with them. You have to start picking up after yourself.
I've even made a song for my son about cleaning up. He thinks I'm a ridiculous fool, I probably am, but you've got to try something.
No, they do that in kindergarten, and like I said, it'll work for in class. Like,
and then
they're
it
great.
Doesn't stick.
No, they're at home. They're like, no, this is where I can be free. Okay, Lloyd, anything you want to plug for the viewers? Anything?
Instagram?
Yeah.
Lloyd Bishop Instagram, Bishop's Daily. Instagram? It's the same thing.
I've got
two different platforms.
Cue Card Wally is my Twitter handle. I think I'm under C. Ferriston, which is Chris Ferriston for Instagram.
Oh, yeah, you're on your Insta, C. Ferriston.
I don't really
post
things.
Which confused me at the beginning, and now we've been told I don't need to be confused anymore.
Yeah, and maybe we should say goodbye before we say anything that gets us fired. What do you think?
Yeah, that's good. I like my job, so...
So you start the wrap-up there.
This
how about
has
that?
Been very fun. You know, it has been fun talking to you, Wally. Thanks for chatting. Thanks for asking
You know what,
questions.
Lloyd? You too.
Oh, thanks,
hey, and everybody, Lloyd. Thanks for listening. This has been Late Night Chats with Wally and Lloyd.
Good night.
Good night.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, la, la. Where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.